He spoke of the square, the way in which it had been converted into a shrine to Dr. Jean, and of the attitudes of the people, the way in which they seemed to be in a trance. Discussing the set cameras and the vid screens on the street corners was more difficult. The companions had a greater knowledge of the old tech than the swamp dwellers, and it was sometimes hard to make them understand just what the old tech meant in terms of attack. Judging from the hardware he and JB had seen the sec patrol toting, LaVille also had a well-stocked arsenal. With old tech surveillance and a strong sec force, plus the sheer size of the population within LaVille, mounting an attack would be suicide.
In the end, I agree with you. Dr. Jean is scum and dangerous. If he spreads out beyond the swamp, then it could be bad news, and make things worse than they already are. But there will be more fighters abroad to oppose him. Here he's a shark in a pond. Out there he'd be a guppy. I've looked around here, and I'm telling you, there's no way you have enough hardware or enough men to take him on in his own territory. If you could fight and run, then maybe, just maybe, you could make inroads on depleting his forces. But even if you could get all of your people inside without being spotted on the way, you'd still be wiped out. Face a few facts here. You're gonna need hardware, and where's that coming from? Half your people are too young or too old. Beausoleil can tell you that himself. Truth, it's not our fight. And I don't want to send my people in to die.
Let's hear what the others have to say.
I have to agree with Ryan on this. You don't have an armory here, or anywhere near enough men. If I was in his position, I wouldn't want to commit us to this.
LaRue, Predo, what have you got to say about this?
You know, Rissa, everything about me wants to fight them. But they scared the living crap out of me. They got it nailed down tight. And even with these guys, me and Predo nearly got ourselves iced in there. We could maybe take out some of them, cause some damage, but we couldn't stop them. Fuck you, Rissa. I'd say let's go for it if there was any chance. But at the very least, we have to spend a whole lot of time training up. Maybe try to get some more hardware. It'd take a shitload of time.
Time's something we got. I suppose you're going back everyone on this?
Princess, you got me all wrong. You think like I'm some kind of coward who doesn't want to fight. You really think that after we stood together and blasted fuck out of whoever was against us? Shit, babe, it's not about that. If I thought we had a chance of taking on Jean and a realistic chance of kicking some ass and ending his reign, then I'd be with you. But you weren't there. You didn't see it. It was like Ryan said, all of it. Shit like we've never seen. Shit we couldn't do anything against. It's like I said all along, there ain't enough of us, and we don't have the firepower. I wish we did, no matter what you think of me. That's true.
For once, LaRue had dropped his sardonic exterior. That made his words hit harder than any of the others.
Figure it's not really worth going any further, but I'd still be interested in what young Lawn has to say.
I figure we can take him. Not easy, but it can be done.
Jack, you can't be serious. Not after everything else that's been said. Not after what you saw.
You wouldn't understand. Not about what is and isn't possible. About what you can make happen. I can take these people, work with them, make them better fighters. It'll take time. What else have we got but time? Maybe even get some better blasters. Jean isn't going anywhere, and neither are we.
Jack, there's no way you could take these people and make an army out of them. Not one that could beat Jean. You've seen what it's like in there.
And you haven't seen what it's like in here. I can't leave again. Once was enough. I'll stay and fight this time.
Ryan said nothing. Jack felt he owed these people because he'd walked out on them before. They were his history, his home. This was the place where he was raised. It didn't take Ryan more than a second to realize that this had nothing to do with rational thought. It was something your conscience would make you do, regardless of the consequences. But he couldn't let Jack's feelings dictate the rest of the team's fate. To stay and fight would be the end. Ryan couldn't agree to that.
We've been together a long time, and done a lot of things that looked triple stupid at the time. But we've always stuck together, and not put each other knowingly in danger. But what you're asking now is for us to stay because you want us to, and likely commit suicide. I realize why you feel you have to do this, but I'd rather you stayed with us.
And that means you won't stay.
We can't just do it like that. We can't desert Jack.
You didn't see it. Jack's doing what he has to do, but Ryan's right. We can't follow on to what's a certain chill, because we don't have the same reasons Jack does.
John, I wouldn't have thought you'd give up so easily.
It's not about that. It's about what's best for all of us.
But surely it is not best for all of us if we have to leave one behind. Certainly not for that one. That's what they used to call democracy, isn't it? Back in the day, the greatest good for the greatest number?
Not quite. Democracy was about everyone having a say in how things were done, which I venture to suggest...
This isn't a democracy. It never has been. Trader taught me and JB that years ago. Unity is strength. You get a leader you can trust, and you act on what he says. Sometimes it isn't that easy to ask everyone's opinion. You need a fast decision, and so you have a leader to carry the team. I don't think that this was easy.
My dear sir, that is the last thing I wish to suggest. The responsibilities of such leadership weigh heavily, and I would not wish to criticize the manner in which you have handled anything. However, to leave Jack behind seems somehow...
I know, but Jack wants to do this, and he'll do it anyway. I have to think about the rest of us. And this would be bad for us as a group. I can't see it any other way. And I doubt if any of you can. But if you accept me as leader, then you have to accept my decisions. That's part of the deal. Otherwise you get a new leader, and we don't stay together at all.
Ryan's right. If I stay, I can't accept his decision. But the rest of you need to be strong together, no matter what the cost.
Ryan rested his people for a couple more days before wanting to move them out. There were still traces of fever and infections in the old cuts and sores that needed treatment. Mildred had the medications, she merely needed the time to apply them. By the same token, the companions paid for their keep by helping to hunt for the slim pickings that could be found in the swamp. Ryan was mindful of the fact that the settlement dwellers were letting them stay because of Jack, and that they were using valuable supplies. There was little enough food in the settlement at the best of times, without it being used by five people who wouldn't fight for them. Marissa was unhappy at their staying, but Jack assuaged her. The other elders understood Ryan's position, even those who didn't agree with him, but the hot-headed Marissa was in no mood to listen to reason, until Jack managed to turn her around. It made for an uneasy truce. But it did give the companions a chance to see what the settlement had to offer in the way of fighting forces, what Jack had to work with. Prior to that, they had seen only a few of the swamp warriors out in the field, hunting and running patrols. Now it seemed that the entire ville was galvanized to action. After voicing his decision to stay, Jack had faced the mass of settlement folk who were waiting for word from their elders. At the behest of Beausoleil, who wanted his people to know exactly what they faced, Ryan spoke first. He outlined everything, and explained why he couldn't commit his people to the fight. Many of the dwellers had their own skepticisms about the chances of taking on Dr. Jean, and their fears were confirmed by what Ryan had told them. Despite this, they were inspired by Jack's words. Never one to demonstrate with speech, Jack simply told them it could be done, and he, for one, would rather die trying than walk away. This faith was enough to move even the most skeptical. All those who were fit enough, and not too young or old to be of use, were willing to undergo combat training to prepare themselves. Those who couldn't fight would be backup, gathering weapons, venturing onto trade routes for weapons, perhaps even taking on some of the enemy squads.
I don't get it. They were real down when we arrived, and now they think they can take on the whole Deathlands.
Morale, my dear John Barrymore. There is nothing like hope to fire the human spirit. Better to live one day as a lion than 1,000 years as a lamb. Or something like that. I fear I am guilty of paraphrasing. It means better to die free than live a slave.
Yeah, if this was our fight, I guess I could see that.
Jack, by JB's side, tried to keep his disappointment hidden. The settlement had very little in the way of hardware. They had hand blasters, a few rifles, two SMGs, a couple of shotguns, and some of the old blunderbuss-style weapons Marissa, LaRue, and Prideaux had used when the friends had first encountered them.
Most hunting done with a snare and a knife. There's no real need for blasters this deep. Can loot from Sec as we go. If we take it in a series of surprise attacks, then take out small parties and seize their weapons.
That's a slim chance, no matter how well you train them.
Can you think of anything better? How deep is this place? How far from trade routes?
Wish I could think of something else, but there isn't, is there?
The armorer dropped to his haunches and examined the blasters. The hand blasters consisted of a number of Smith & Wesson 38 police specials, some 9mm Walthers, a couple of Glocks, and some even older Colt 44s. peacemakers, which J.B. suspected had been looted from a museum. The store of ammo to go with these was erratic, with some of them having no more than 50 or 60 rounds apiece. The rifles were old Lee Enfield 303s and Sharps, again looted from some kind of museum. There was nothing more contemporary than this. The SMGs were a couple of Uzis and half a dozen H&K MP5s. Again, the ammo for these amounted to very little when doled out among the individual blasters. There were two Smith & Wesson M4000s, like the one favored by the armorer, but again there was little ammo for a long-term firefight. The five old blunderbuss-style blasters were like nothing he'd seen before. Parts of them were identifiable as being from the original blasters, but new stocks had been added to some, and the trigger mechanisms had been repaired with wire over the years. If they didn't explode in the faces of whoever used them, that was a plus in his reckoning. There was plentiful shot for these, but their condition was a grave cause for concern.
Jack, there's no way, even if we work on these, that they're going to be up to taking the Ville on their own. Maybe you need to rethink what you're really hitting. I mean, Dr. Jean has a stranglehold on that Ville, right? He controls the people with either drugs, hypnosis, or old tech. Maybe all three. But that's why they follow him. Not because they really believe in him, or they're in fear of him.
So maybe, if we take out Jean, there is no other enemy?
Mm-hmm. Could be the only way, unless you get a miracle of some kind and a wag full of hardware lands on your damn head.
While Jack mulled over the possibility of forming such a plan, he was faced with the task of shaping the settlement dwellers into a fighting force. Those in the settlement who had been hunting already had the skills needed for a guerrilla attack, and they had accuracy with a blaster and ability with a knife. Their problems were related to their attitude. As for the others, it was a conundrum. To improve their blaster skills, Jack would need to use precious ammo. Yet without some kind of practice, they would be unreliable in a firefight. Prideaux didn't like being asked where to find more ammunition.
Listen, Jack. We always had to make the ammo last for a long time. You think we get many traders in these parts? Sometimes we get ships washed up on the edge of the bayou, same way you got here. And sometimes we can maybe trade or raid a stray wag. But there ain't no regular port of call around here, and we've always had to scrimp and save and be careful. You think that's gonna change now, just cause you want us all to go out in a blaze of glory? I can't believe.
Nearby, Christy and Ryan observed unnoticed.
So that'll be a no then.
Damn it. Jack's bitten off more than he can chew.
So you want us to stay? Help out?
All it does is make me sure it was the right decision for the group. It doesn't mean that I don't feel for Jack, though.
Jack would have been unconcerned if he had caught this. He had other things to worry about. Training the settlement dwellers in unarmed combat and the art of using knives wasn't without its own problems. Down by the pond in front of the huts, there was a patch of land the albino had decided would be useful as a practice ground. He gathered groups, 10 at a time, to instruct them in what was needed for the fight. Demonstrating choking holds that would cut blood and air supplies to their enemies when approached from behind, he used other settlement dwellers as victims, then paired off the remainder, according to what he perceived as their ability and experience, changing the pairings as he observed their skills and capacities. His notion was to bring together a frontline force from within the settlement. But that sometimes meant that those with deep-seated grudges went up against each other. Such was the situation when he paired Marissa and Prideaux in a knife combat. As Marissa and Prideaux began to circle each other, it became apparent that despite the nature of the session, there was to be no quarter given.
So, princess, you're gonna show off your skills in front of your new man, are you?
Marissa let her blade do the talking. She thrust at him. He parried easily and tripped her. She rolled as she fell, away from the arc of his blade that sliced the air around her dark mane.
Bitch, you never gave me a chance. And now you and that stoop white asshole of yours are gonna get us all killed.
He whirled to parry an overhead strike, kicking out at her and landing a foot in the middle of her stomach. Marissa doubled up as he came in to strike with an underhand blow, but she realized his intent. She threw herself backward, forcing herself to breathe, and flipped and landed awkwardly, stumbling to one side. But it was enough, as his upward thrust into thin air had unbalanced him, and he stumbled as he tried to halt his momentum and stay his forward movement. A movement that would bring him directly in line with her knife hand.
You don't believe in us? You can never be one of us.
She gritted, making ready to place a blow between shoulders, aiming for the juncture of his throat and chest cavity. His stance was completely open, and there was nothing he could do to prevent her from killing him. Until Jack stepped in. Moving with incredible speed, he came between the two of them, forcing Credo to one side so that he stumbled and fell harmlessly. Jack's left arm shot up in a straight-arm blow that pushed Marissa's hand to one side, the force of the blow numbing her fingers and making her drop the blade. His right hand, bunched into a fist, hit her with a sharp jab at the point of the jaw. She crumpled to the ground, unconscious. Jack whirled to where Prideaux was just regaining his balance. The ponytailed man looked confused. He thought he was about to die, and hadn't expected Jack to save him. And he especially hadn't expected the albino to treat Marissa in such a fashion.
No one better than others. All in this together. All stand or fall together. All the same.
Before Prideau had a chance to work out what was happening, Jack hit him with an uppercut that took him off his feet.
We all gonna learn from this? Or are we gonna try to fight each other instead of Jean?
Jack could see some sullen expressions in his audience, but there was no audible dissent. On the morning of the third day, it was time for the five companions to move on.
You could always stay a little longer. With the training for the raid going on, we're short of hunters. Someone has to bring in the food.
Yeah, but we eat as much as we catch. Maybe more. It doesn't really figure.
Maybe not. But maybe I was figuring you could come in useful around here. Face it, we need all the help we can get. Young Lon's good, but he can't do it all alone.
And he can't do it with us. There's no changing that.
Nevertheless, the others caught the hint of regret in Ryan's voice. And Jack caught it, too. He came out to see them off, with Marissa in his wake. Never one for goodbyes, he stood apart from the group as they gathered their baggage for the haul ahead. JB had taken a reading with his mini-sextant, and they had worked out the direction of the redoubt. Perhaps it would be in the hands of Dr. Jean and his sec, perhaps not. If the redoubt proved to be impregnable, then they would just strike on past it until they found the next ville on their route.
Jack, it's been a long time. We're gonna miss you.
I miss you too, Ryan. But I understand why you can't stay.
The companion struck out for the heart of the swamp. LaRue would go with them part of the way to guide them to the nearest clear-cut path that would put them on course.